back to the shooting itself that happened on Saturday, and it's been covered internationally because when you have a shooting in which a gunman walks in and brazenly shoots up, in this case, a supermarket, kills 10 people and wounds several more. And the story involved, he was in tactical gear. He had planned this for months. It was a clearly racial shooting. He just was going after black people. We knew that. He was a racist. He had been radicalized. But I want to go to a point that has not been covered a lot, and that is he live streamed it. He had a camera on his helmet, and this was being live streamed on Twitter. He took a page after the gunman in New Zealand walked into a mosque, again, live streaming, killed 49 people. That video was broadcast all over the world on the internet. It was horrific. It was even broadcast on network television, obviously heavily edited with faces that were blacked out or that were covered up. And to watch this and seeing this, that you're watching as it happened, or in this case, it was a video of what happened previously, was brutal. Now, can you imagine watching this in real time? There were 22 people that were watching the moment he was doing this. He was live streaming the killing of those individuals. As a matter of fact, he was live streaming for like half an hour, 45 minutes before the actual shooting. As he's driving to the supermarket, he is talking about it, what he's going to do. He said, this is not a drill. This is for real. And he described it. And then as soon as he got to the supermarket, he parked the car. He was in the parking lot, opened the door, and started shooting instantly. And the first person he hit was a woman who was just walking across the parking lot. And he talked about live streaming. And he talked about the impact of live streaming. I mean, he clearly understood that this was a terrorist act. He intended it for it to be a terrorist act to make his point. And he had been radicalized, his hero. And he talked about this, was the shooter in New Zealand. Other racists around the world taking page after page from these, these people are, I'm not even going to use the word nuts, because in many cases they're not. They're just these committed racists who believe that minorities shouldn't be here. And he talks about his theories that white people are being subjugated, the replacement theory that if you're white, we are going to be minorities. We're not going to have jobs anymore. The blacks and Hispanics and Jews, a lot of anti-Semitism, are going to take over the world. Okay, so with that in mind, and that's not new. That's been going on for thousands of years. But the point I want to make is about the live streaming and the major streaming platforms. 22 people watched it. Twitter has a program 24/7 in which if something like this is caught, and I don't know, via algorithm or someone watches it and talks about it or some kind of a system, they shut it down. And they shut it down in 2 minutes after the first shooting started. So you have to give them credit for that. In the meantime, one person recorded it and then uploaded it on various sites. Now, the major platforms do a pretty decent job of shutting this down. Facebook, by the way, it took them 10 hours. Go figure that one out. But it had already gone up on these weird websites, or if not, let's just say anonymous websites like 4chan, which are racially motivated. This is where the conspiracy theorists and those people of that ilk go on. But the point is, and then they share it, and they talk to each other, and they plan these horrific events. Sometimes they plan demonstrations and Nazi demonstrations, et cetera. This all happens on 4chan. Someone uploaded on several of these. And all of a sudden, it went from 22 people who saw it to millions of viewers that saw it around the world. And the bottom line here is, as sophisticated as these platforms are, And we're talking about the majors, Facebook, YouTube, et cetera, Twitch as one. And this is the Twitch one that we're talking about. This is that platform. Is that once one person gets hold of it, it is out there in the universe. It's in the metaverse. And they can't stop it. That's the problem. It can't be stopped. And these horrific people are going to use that. They understand the power. They understand that live streaming this, the impact is extraordinary, and that's taking advantage of the internet in an evil, depraved way. But that's the internet. All the positive that comes from the internet, and of course, it's going to go down as one of the great, great inventions of humanity, along with fire and printing. I mean, the internet. But here's the negative. Using this as a tool, and probably one of the most effective tools that a single terrorist, because this is straight out terrorism, can cause. Scary stuff. It really is. Talking about just this horrific attack in Buffalo and here in Southern California, Laguna Woods. But whenever we hear of a shooting, Chicago, 30 shootings over the weekend, or 30 people injured over the weekend, a couple dead, we don't even talk about it unless there has been a mass shooting, and that's defined as four or more people being shot. I mean, how crazy is that? So we've simply changed the way we think. I mean, we don't feel safe anymore. I mean, I know people, and I've talked about this, will not go into a supermarket, will not go to big venues where people congregate because of exactly this. If you're at home or you're seeing friends or you're going to small venues, what are your chances of someone walking in and shooting it up? Very little. What happens at mass events? Your chances are far higher. And so I want to spend a little bit talking about what the psychologists are saying about this, because we just don't feel safe anymore. We don't. Wake up in the morning, we don't feel safe. And and this is, again, quoting various psychologists. This is a story out of HuffPost that went ahead and interviewed people that know what they're doing in the psychological world. And we are confronting a rising sense of unease. We've got white supremacy, which is exploding, gun control. We're not talking about the political issue. We're just talking about everybody having guns out there, and or a lot of people having guns, and the wrong people are having guns. By the way, even the Second Amendment people do not like wrong people from having guns. You've got terrorism, both international terrorism, which has dropped significantly, and then we've got homegrown terrorism. When we're talking about race-based terrorism, like what happened in Buffalo, and straight-out mental illness. You know, crazy people walking around. But it's more than that. There's a huge mental health component about it. Not the mental health component of the crazy guy, of the person that shot up the place. We're talking about ours. And a lot of people just feel wherever we go, we're making ourselves unsafe, vulnerable. And that is a natural response. That's what happens. So diving into it, interview with Victor Schwartz, chief medical officer at the Jed Foundation, mental health organization, said it's a core principle of human psychology that we need to feel our world is relatively orderly and predictable. It's more than just being frightened. It's the world is turned upside down. We wake up in the morning, we expect to go to work. We expect that we're not going to get shot up. We expect we're not going to turn on the news and read that an 18-year-old gunman walked in and killed 10 people at a supermarket. It just disrupts everything. We look for patterns to help us organize things that we're able to navigate day-to-day life. It's about predictability is what this is about. That's where the psychologists are going. And we live for well, expected and predictable events in our lives. We go to work at the same time for the most part. We drive our cars on the street in a way we expect. Other drivers, although that's another one too, with drivers now going, I don't know how fast. In the morning I come in here and Jen's talked about it and we've talked about it a bunch of times. I'm plugging along at what I think is a high speed, 75 miles per hour. People blow past me like I am literally parked, and they're driving past me at 50 miles per hour. Man, now we have anxiety, which we didn't have before. I used to just get pissed off at traffic. Now it's a whole new world. Now it's, I hate traffic, and I hate traffic because I don't know if the guy next to me is going to pull out a shotgun and blow my brains out. I get into it, I cut someone off. Man, I apologize. Someone cuts me off, I apologize. I'm so sorry I'm here that I somehow got in your way. Again, it's predictability. And unfortunately, it's the fact that it's no longer predictable makes it hugely uncomfortable. And when you talk about terrorism, and again, we're moving back to that. And even these terrorists don't really understand, because they're moving in a level that is pretty simplistic. Deeper than that, it's not just killing people and setting up a political statement by killing people. In the case of the gunman in Buffalo, it's, I hate black people. They're taking over the world. I'm going to show them. I'm going to get rid of black people. And I'm going to be a hero to a lot of people, which is why what he said when he was live streaming going up to the supermarket in his car.
Hey, and Handel, do you want to go live really fast to the president, if only for a second? He's making remarks now on the deadly supermarket shooting in Buffalo, New York. Sure. And just take it for a second.
This is a lot of, when a vice presidential or a presidential chip shows up, it's there's all kinds of paraphernalia and people, and I know it's not easy. I want to thank your law enforcement officers for not just what they did in this crisis, but for accommodating us and all the elected officials and law enforcement officers, first responders, and faith leaders that are here today. Jill and I have come to stand with you, and to the families, we've come to grieve with you. It's not the same, but we know a little bit what it's like to lose a piece of your soul, when you lose a son, a daughter, a husband, a wife, a mother, a father. The feeling of having that, as I said to some of you when we talked privately, you feel like there's a black hole in your chest you're being sucked into, and you're suffocating, unable to breathe. That's what it felt like, at least to us, and I'm sure some version of that feels that way to you. The anger, the pain, the depth of a loss that's so profound. You know, we know it's hard to believe, and you're probably not going to believe it, but I can tell you now, from our personal experience and many others who we've met, the day's going to come, it will come, when your loved one brings a smile as you remember him or her, as you remember her, it's going to bring a smile to your lip before it brings a tear to your eye. It takes a while for that to happen.
I don't either. I think what we're hearing is basically what we expected to hear.
Our prayer for you is that that time comes sooner or later, but I promise you it will come. As a nation, I say to the families, we remember them. We've been reading about them. We visited the memorial where they show the love for them, and you've all shown by the supermarket. And Celestine Chaney, 65 years old, brain cancer survivor, churchgoer, bingo player, went to buy strawberries to make her favorite shortcake. A loving mother and a grandmother. Roberta Drury, 32, beloved daughter and sister, moved back home to help take care of her brother after his bone marrow transplant. She went to buy groceries for dinner, the center of attention, who made everyone in the room laugh and smile when she walked in. Andre McNeil, 53, worked at a restaurant, went to buy his three-year-old son a birthday cake. His son's celebrating a birthday. Ask him, where's daddy? Catherine Massey, 72, a writer and an advocate, who dressed up in costumes at schools and cut the grass in the park and helped in local elections, the glue of the family and the community. Marcus Morrison, 52, school bus aide, went to buy snacks for a weekly movie night with the family, survived by his wife and three children and a stepdaughter, the center of their world. Hayward Patterson, 67, father, church deacon, fed the homeless at the soup kitchen, gave rides at a grocery store to neighbors who needed help, putting food in the trunk of others when he took his final breath. Aaron Salter, 55, retired Buffalo police officer for three decades. Loved electric cars, hero who gave his life to save others on a Saturday afternoon. And had that man not been wearing that vest that he purchased, bulletproof vest, a lot of lives would have been saved. A beloved father and husband. Geraldine Talley, 62, expert banker known for her warm, gentle personality, a friend to everybody, devoted mother and grandmother. Ruth Whitfield, 88, beloved wife, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, sang in the church choir, a caretaker of her husband, bringing him clean clothes, cutting his hair, holding his hand every day she visited him in the nursing home. Heart as big as her head. Pearl Young, 77, a mother, grandmother, missionary of God, public school teacher, who also ran the local food pantry, loved singing, dancing, and her family. And all three are injured. Zaire Goodman, 20, shot in the neck, but fighting through it. Jennifer Warrington, 50, Christopher Braden, 55, both treated with injuries on a long road to recovery. Individual lives of love, service, and community. It speaks to the bigger story of who we are as Americans. A great nation, because we're good people. Jill and I bring you this message from deep in our nation's soul. In America, evil will not win, I promise you. Hate will not prevail. And white supremacy will not have the last word. For the evil did come to Buffalo. It's come to all too many places, manifesting gunmen who massacred innocent people in the name of hateful and perverse ideology, rooted in fear and racism. It's taken so much. 10 lives cut short in a grocery store. Three other wounded by a hate-filled individual who had driven 200 miles from Binghamton and that range to carry out a murderous, racist rampage that he would live stream to the world.
And Handel, that's what you've been talking about. That is President Biden now speaking in Buffalo, New York. He met with the victims of the shooting there. There were 10 different people who were killed, as the president just said. Also, you've got three others who were wounded. And he went there today just to show solidarity with his wife, obviously. He spoke with not only the victims' families, but he spoke with the first responders and the people who were in the grocery store as well that day. And just again, it's hearing, I don't know if it did it for you, but hearing the reason those people were in the grocery store that day to get strawberries, to buy a birthday cake, something like that, makes it so personal. Even though it happened across the country from us, that brings it home that it could have been any of us in this case. So again, that was President Biden speaking in Buffalo, New York, the scene of the shooting over the weekend.
So let's go into a different direction and talk about something that I and you particularly interested in. And that is, at some point, purchasing an electric vehicle. I think most people, especially now with what's going on with the gas-powered cars and the cost of gasoline, I mean, we're gulping. when we go fill up the gas tank. I mean, it is crazy. $80, $100 to fill up a gas tank. North of that, I have an almost 20-gallon tank. $120 is not unusual for me to spend. I mean, it is really crazy. So I'm looking for an EV. I'm looking for an electric vehicle. And there aren't any to be had. But it's fair to say the future is here, and we're going to be there within 10 years. I don't know how many internal combustion engines cars are going to be out there. But there's something going on with electric vehicles that a lot of people have. A lot of people are thinking, is they're not inherently safe because of those batteries, those lithium batteries that have a habit of catching fire. Oh, boy. Well, the problem is they don't have a habit of catching fire. I'm going to throw a stat at you in just a moment that's somewhat, a little stunning. This has to do, for example, the story with the vapes. You know, the cheap knockoff vapes, and a few times they have caught fire. In several cases, in this case it was a guy or several guys in the pocket, and all of a sudden they caught fire, and then you had a case of roasted chestnuts. And it was just, that became huge news. But the reality is, how many of them? Same thing with EVs, okay? If you look at, here's a stat from Auto Insurance EZ. Based on findings from the National Transportation Safety Board and the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. Now we're talking about federal data that has come out. Okay, let's this. If you look at the frequency of fires, and that's collisions and just catching on fire, et cetera. If you look at what happened in 2021, hybrid vehicles had the most fires per 100,000 at 3,475 fires in hybrid vehicles, where part of it is electric and, of course, part of it is internal combustion. Vehicles with just an internal combustion engine place second, and that is per 100,000 cars, 1,530 caught on fire. So that's not to say internal combustion engines don't catch on fire. They do. Now we go to fully electric vehicles. Keep in mind, this is per 100,000. 25 per 100,000. Hybrids, 3,400. Almost 3,500. Internal combustion engines, 1,500. Fully electric vehicles, 25. And people are frightened. Oh boy, because we've heard about these fires. How many do you think there actually are? Maybe a few dozen. That's all we've heard of. And when the EVs do burn, though, it's the battery usually. And so what stops all of them from catching on fire? Well, they don't. If you look at the way these are built, if you look at the batteries, and this is the danger part of an electric vehicle, the battery is designed so it doesn't catch on fire. It's encased effectively in armor so that if there is a fire, it doesn't go very far. It goes no place. And it's just a very, very safe car. So for those people that are thinking, am I doing a push to sell you an EV? No. I'd rather buy one before you do, because that means I'm not going to stay in line very long. But one of the things, when you look at a fire and you read about it, or it's in the news, and, oh, my God, another EV has caught fire, a Tesla has caught fire, just think of the stats. 25 per 100,000. Versus your car, the internal combustion engine car, is at 1,500 per 100,000 in terms of vehicles catching on fire. I want to end the show with a topic that, if you've ever gotten onto an airplane in the last year, 2 years, you're going to know what I'm talking about, particularly since the end of the pandemic, and that is your flight's delayed. It's a given that your flight's delayed. As a matter of fact, let me put it this way. When your flight is not delayed, that is aberrational in the world of flying right now, both business and leisure travel. And so what are the flight delays all about? Who's at fault? What's at fault? Well, we got a lot of bad weather. The storms are going crazy back east. If you've noticed that the horrible weather is worse today than it was 2-3 years ago, flood after flood and storm after storm. So you've got bad weather, particularly on the east. You have mechanical issues, lots of those. Traffic on the tarmac. Have you ever spent an hour on the tarmac waiting to either get onto the runway to take off or waiting for a gate when you've come back? Man, I've spent an hour, 45 minutes or 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, it drives you nuts. I mean, so much traffic just on the tarmac. And now there is something that is rapidly taking hold in terms of delays. And I don't know if you've thought about this. Rocket launches. Rocket launches are delaying your flight. In recent weeks, flight in and out of Florida have seen a sharp, sharp increase in delays. For example, Palm Beach International Airport logged more than 100 delays or cancellations just on April 15. You go to Jacksonville International Airport, nearly 9,000 flight delays in March. So last week, federal regulators met to discuss these disruptions. Because, man, you got a lot of ongoing challenges, not just the storms. We have the rising cost of jet fuel. So when planes are either sitting on the tarmac or they're being diverted, which is the case of rockets, well, no, it's not only being diverted, they're also sitting on the tarmac. Everything is delayed. So you've got the rising cost of jet fuel. You got the pandemic, which has affected everybody. The shortage of airline workers. In Florida, it's particularly difficult because so many launches. So what does that have to do with us? Well, you're seeing spaceports being built. And you're going to have, and I'm telling you, it's not too much in the future because what is happening, space tourism. You've got two companies right now, actually three companies that are involved in space tourism. You've got Virgin, you've got Blue Origin, I think that's the name of Bezos' company, and you've got Elon Musk and his company. And that one, by the way, that's the end-all be-all. That's 3 days of orbit. I mean, that's a serious space tourism extravaganza, and it really is. Also costs you $20 million to go up there. And so right now, it's Florida for the most part. Although New Mexico, there's a spaceport coming up. These problems are going to get a lot worse. Many more flights are coming up. New launch facility in other parts of the country. And you know what's going to happen here in Southern California. And the impact. And the problem is relatively straightforward. Here's what happens. Rockets are going up in the air. Air traffic controllers have to ground or reroute flights during launches, and I'm talking about 15 minutes, half an hour before and after. It's like Air Force One landing. And why is the FAA so involved in this? It's a rocket ship. It goes up into space, and space is not controlled by anybody. It's international. The only treaty is that space is international, and it belongs to everybody. Every country. Well, a rocket going from Earth into space, it has to travel through airspace before it gets up there out of the stratosphere. Well, that's controlled by the FAA. From the time a rocket launches to the time it hits space, that's all controlled by the FAA. And they have to deal with it. Rockets actually have to be cleared by the FAA. That's one of the big, big points of not only contention, but of just trying to get going because the regulations are so heavy. You've got NASA, you've got the FAA. I mean, it's not easy to get a permit to fly a rocket. And not only is the spaceship going up, but also there's debris that comes down. Anything that comes back to Earth. And that's virtually every rocket has that, even the most reusable rocket that Tesla has or that SpaceX has. There are still pieces that come to Earth. That's all controlled by the FAA. And so they're looking at this, and they just met the FAA and experts met last week and said, we got to figure this out. Right now, the FAA typically stops flights from traveling within sort of a rectangle-shaped block of sky. It can go from 40 to several hundred miles long, depending on the launch. A launch going straight up, very different animal than a launch going at an angle and going for a long period of time, depending on the orbit. And, you know, I'm not particularly familiar with all of the technical aspects or the science aspects of this. But that changes. And if there's debris, and all of them have debris, then air traffic controllers have to stand by until it all falls to Earth. And that can take anywhere from 30 to 50 minutes, which means no one is flying in that zone or that area. And a single space launch can disrupt hundreds of flights. You just wait until one of these space ports come to Southern California. Crazy. All right. Coming up, Gary and Shannon. Also, I am taking phone calls. If you are interested in marginal legal advice, I'm taking calls off the air. The number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. I go through these phone calls pretty quickly because, you know, I have so much patience with people. So it's marginal legal advice, 877-520-1150, off the air. We start again tomorrow at 5 a.m. wake-up call with Jennifer Jones Lee. I'm here with the rest of the crew from 6 to 10. And we're out of here until tomorrow. This is KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.